The DigitalLifestyle.com presents The Media Centre Show, show 143, Thursday, 7th February, 2008. Show with tech.co.uk. I'm Ian Dixon, and this week returning to the show is S1 Digital's Paul Hetlinger. And Paul had some good fun at my expense at the Media Centre Show dinner, and in this week's show Paul talks about S1 Digital offering cable card solutions, and he talks about their new Media Centre systems and fitting them with the HD and Blu-ray drives. I also have email and news items and a winner for email of the week. So welcome to the show, it's great to have you along. I'm going to dive straight into the email. The first one is from John McGuinness. It says, "Hi there, Ian. I'm having a bit of problem with my Xbox 360 connected to the media centre and then disconnecting again after 10 minutes, almost to the second, and then asking me if I want to reconnect. Have you any clues to what's causing this? Could it have to do with the NAS box I recently bought off eBay? Cheers, mate." Well, thanks for the email, John. That's an interesting problem. Normally, if you get disconnecting issues, it can be a network, it points to a network problem, but it's really strange the fact it corresponds exactly to 10 minutes. I mean, that does seem strange. I would have a look at the Windows Event Viewer. In there, you can have a look under the Media Center section, have a look under the Applications and the Systems section. Just see if there's anything strange going on in there. Have a look, see if you think there's something not right. Because I've never had that issue really with my Xbox. Disconnecting. I think I've had it, apart from network issues, I think I've had it when something's gone wrong on the Media Center PC and something's actually crashed. The extender service needs to be running, and I wonder whether that's causing it, but it does sound like a network issue. So have a look at that, and if any listeners have heard anything like this sort of reoccurrence of 10 minutes, please email me and help John out. The email address is ian@thedigitallifestyle.com, and I really would appreciate some assistance on that. And thanks to John anyway. So John's going to get email of the week, because this, if we can track this down, this is going to be a good pointer for anybody else that has this problem. Now an email from Justin. He says, "Hi there. I live in the UK and wanted to buy a Linksys DMA2200. I was wondering where in the US did you get yours from and how much? I really like one. I've contacted Linksys and they failed to get back to me. Your help were great. Thanks, Justin." Thanks for the email, Justin. In fact, I got my devices directly from Linksys because I've got them on review and I'm going to have to send them back at some point. But if you want to buy them, there are a few places starting to sell them now. I think we mentioned links on the past in the show. And if you go to the store section on thedigitallifestyle.com, I've set up an Amazon store, and you can get both Linksys Media Center extenders in there via Amazon. And when I checked this last night, they said they were 1 to 2 weeks shipping time. But I think they started to ship now, so have a look at that. If any listeners have any suggestions for where to go for Linksys extenders, let me know. I do know that Linksys.co.uk also have them on there as well, so have a look at that. And talking about extenders, you may have read my first impressions of the 2100, so perhaps update that now. I got the 2100 last week. And the first thing I tried to do, as you may have seen if you watched the live session we did and the first impressions video, is I tried to connect that up to my Sony TV via the component cables. But due to the way that my TV is mounted on the wall, I couldn't actually get the component cables in. So I had to use composite in lieu of not having a HDMI cable, which I've now got. So my first experience wasn't brilliant using the component cable, but it did work. The user interface, okay, it was running not in standard def and not in HD, but it looked okay, and the device was very easy to connect up to my Media Center PC. I just plugged it into my network, searched for a Media Center PC, it found it over on my PC, there was a code on the Linksys extender. I had to enter into the Media Center PC, and then it went through the configuring the extender, just as it does when you connect up the Xbox. But then I got a message on the Linksys extender saying an update was needed for Media Center PC, which I thought was strange because I'm always up to date. I've got Windows updates on and everything else. But when I did follow the link that was displayed on the extender, it took me to Microsoft's site, and there is in fact an update for the MIDI Center extenders. So I downloaded that link, rebooted, and then the extender connected. So that was working fine. So over the weekend I got a HDMI cable. I connected up the 2100 via the HDMI to the Sony LCD. And I use the coaxial audio cable to go digitally into my Denon receiver. And I have been using it since Saturday now, and you know, the family have been using it. And it's, must admit, it's pretty good, actually. It's not as good as the experience of the Xbox 360 for the menu transitions. And I think the general clarity of the display and the text and everything else. I normally have my Xbox 360 connected via VGA, running in one of the higher resolutions via VGA, and it does look a smoother picture and not as, maybe I'll be able to show that on the next video I do, but it's not as digital, everything's smoother, but in operation you really can't tell. I think the colours seem to be a bit oversaturated, but I've heard that can be an issue with the HDMI, and the VGA on the Xbox is probably it's like undersaturated, so I've got used to that. But the picture is great for TV. When you're in the menus and things, like I said, you can see a bit of sort of it's not as clear and as smooth as the Xbox 360, and the transitions between menu items aren't as smooth. But everything works on it fine. I was able to use all of Media Center, and I was able to use some home automation, M-Control home automation software, and my Media Center health monitor, the Media Center UI component of that was working fine. So the bespoke applications and custom applications seem to be working. But in operation, really, you know, you can't fault it. It worked fine. And I was running it through my LAN. And like I said, I was running it in place of Xbox 360. And apart from the, I think because it's running in 1080i, as opposed to running the Xbox in 13-something by 768, I think, The text seems slightly smaller, perhaps, but really, apart from the colour saturation, you couldn't really tell which box was running, and as I said, the menu items aren't quite as smooth. But a good experience, and over the LAN, working no problem. Now, I have got a 2200 weighted to try, so later on this week, I'm going to try that one evening. I'm going to switch out the 2100 for the 2200 and see if we can we live with that, and because that's got a built-in DVD player. So far so good, and obviously the wireless is the next thing I need to test, so I'm going to be looking at that. Now, I have had some questions about various things like DivX and subtitles and things, so I've kept all those, so hopefully one night this week I'll be able to play with those and put those questions in and give them a try. And like I said, I put out a video from my first experience, so sort of the unboxing video, so you can see what's in the box and everything else. A link for that is in the show notes. Another video I posted over the weekend was my last recording from CES. This is where Tim Cutting from Nevius and I walked around the show floor, and we were at the Microsoft and Intel booths, and we were looking at extenders and some of the Nevius products, the servers and things like that. And we're also having some fun looking for the Sideshow devices. As you may remember from the 2007 CES, there was Sideshow devices all over in an ice glass case, so we went hunting for those and without too much success, actually. So it's quite funny. Now, Tim, at the end of the video, made a Nevius product announcement where he mentioned a free application from Nevius. This is their Media Center companion software, a basic edition. Now, I like the companion software when I reviewed the beta version a few months back, and it's a great move by Nevius to offer this software for free, so you can control Media Center basically and queue up playlists and things like that. The basic edition doesn't allow you to control TV, but it is nice, especially for queuing up music, things like that. But you have to join the forums to get the free version, so I'll have a link for that in the show notes, and don't forget the video. Over the weekend I played with Miraworld TV for Media Center. It's a new plugin that brings internet TV streams to 10-foot Media Center UI. It's a nice, simple user interface. and there's options of different content, and there's kind of the pivots in MediaCentre style pivots for you to choose different types of content, live content by region, and you know, they kind of choose different ways. I think it was popular categories, countries, etc. And I tried some of the feeds. They seem to be very European based, which is, makes a change. There was a lot of non-English content on there as well. I tried some news feeds and things like that. I tried Sky News. I couldn't get the BBC news feed to work, but Sky News feed worked fine. And they play in full screen or via window. Interesting little plugin, actually. And it's great to get more content into MediaCentre. So have a look at that. I'll link in the show notes. And finally, there's been a lot of talk about Windows Vista Service Pack 1. And I've been running that now on my Samsung Q1 and on one of my desktop machines for a while now, and various builds of it, and there's been no issues really. I think, in fact, hibernating on the Q1 is a lot quicker now than it used to be. Other than that, I've not seen a huge amount of differences. Well, Microsoft have gone RTM with Vista Service Pack 1, RTM being released to manufacturer, which means it's finished. And it's not going to be available until March. Now, I have heard this is to do with some sort of dodgy drivers that can cause a problem with the service pack, and I think Microsoft are writing some kind of Windows update that checks for those dodgy drivers, and then if it does, it blocks Service Pack 1 installing, so you don't have a bad experience. But hopefully that'll come down the line March, and you'll be able to get that on, and includes a number of bug fixes. There's nothing major that I've seen up to now. I think there's just a lot of small fixes and updates and driver updates and things like that. Okay, so that's it for news. The email address for the show is in@thedigitallifestyle.com. I do like getting those. Now time for a message from One Voice. I'm back with Paul Hettlinger.
Introducing MediaCentre Communicator, the perfect complement for Windows MediaCentre. Imagine walking into your home and simply speaking to play music, watch TV, read and send email, call to order pizza, and more. Now with MediaCentre Communicator, you have full control of your digital home using only your voice. And best of all, there is no voice training required. And built on OneVoice's MediaCentre Communicator, MCEach Speech Tools is a powerful speech recognition toolkit allowing developers of MediaCentre compatible applications to easily incorporate speech recognition commands as features. OneVoice offers licenses for MCE speech tools along with its MediaCentre Communicator to the rapidly growing community of MediaCentre developers. Just say it to play it. To learn more, go to www.onev.com.
Well, Paul, welcome back to the MediaCentre show.
Thanks, Ian. And glad to be back.
The reason why we're kind of talking tonight is because of the cable card offering that you do. But before we go into that, just give us a background on S1 Digital and who you are.
So for your listeners who didn't hear us last time, S1 Digital is a MediaCentre OEM. So we make our own hardware, MediaCentres. We have the living room form factor. We have the rack mount form factor. All we do are MediaCentres. We don't offer any office or gaming PCs. All our experience is in this space, and we're one of the few companies that can bridge that divide between the old school AV type equipment with the new school digital entertainment platform, the MediaCentre PC platform. So that's pretty much what we do. We've been around for, I think, 3 to 4 years now. We're growing. We have a showroom in New York City, although we may be moving because we've already outgrown it.
Well, tell us about the showroom idea, because there's not that many people that are offering showrooms to come and have a look at the kit. So what made you go down that route?
So when we started, we were in an office, and we had a lot of customers calling us up asking if they could come down and take a look at what we had to offer. This was back in, you know, two and a half years ago, because we've been here for 2 years now. And explaining what MediaCentre can do over the phone, as you know, doesn't always leave the customer with exactly what the MediaCentre can do. So trying to verbally describe all the different screens and the picture quality and the audio and how it all connects together and all the different options you know, can be a struggle sometimes. So we decided, we already outgrew our previous office, so we were looking for some new space. So we decided we may as well just open a retail showroom where customers could come down and we could actually demonstrate all our technology and the platform and how it all links together. So we have a small room set up that looks like an apartment with two zones. The main zone we have we have the media center demonstrated. And then in the second zone, we have the extender and some audio streaming and some other two zone type feature set up. So customers come down and, you know, let's say that by the time they leave, the customer really gets it. So when we talk to customers on the phone, sometimes if they had no idea what Media Center was about, they would still be scratching their heads a little bit at the end of the conversation. Whereas when they come down to our showroom, they definitely understand how it all fits together, all the different components, what it can do, and all the features.
I guess showing it off in a sort of an environment like a home set up like an apartment, rather than just in an office location, it means that you know someone that's there gets it much better than showing it, like you said, either you're talking through it over the phone or just having it plugged in the corner of the office.
Exactly. And you know, the other thing that we can do is when we talk to customers over the phone, is sometimes it's a little difficult to go through all the features that Media Center can do or all the different options and all the different ways it can be put together. Whereas in the showroom, because it's all out there, we can point to stuff and say, this is one option of how you can connect to your TV. This is how you can stream it to another room. These are all the different menu options. And the customer also asks a lot more questions because they're seeing it in real time, and it stimulates their thought process as well. So it's been really, really beneficial for both us and our customers by having this showroom. Having said that, the space that we're in is a little small, and as we're growing, we've already outgrown the space. In fact, half the showroom right now is full of boxes. So early next year, we may be moving to a bigger space.
When your customers are coming in, are you finding that they're not aware exactly of what Media Center is and they're just, you know, they want home theater, or are they specifically coming to see Media Center?
That's a really good question, Ian. And that's something we've grappled with, digressing a little bit. That's one of the issues we've been grappling with in terms of marketing. We have two types of customers. Well, we have more than two types of customers, but broadly speaking, we have two types of customers. The first type of customer already understands what Media Center can do. They know all about PCs, they're technology savvy, and they're in the market for a Media Center, and they'll come down and they want to see what's special about an S1 Digital Media Center. And then we have another type of customer that has no idea about Media Center and that has heard about us either through our advertising, through magazines or through forum posts or through dealers or some other way or through their friends, and they want to come down to learn about Media Center. And that's been one of the areas we've been struggling with in our marketing. With our limited budget, do we focus more on the techie customer who already understands about Media Center and perhaps wants a cable card set up, therefore they have to buy it from a company like S1 Digital? Or do we focus a lot of our effort on customers that may not know they want a Media Center until we explain it to them, but then that requires a lot more effort on our part in terms of education, reaching out to those customers, and so forth.
So it's a difficult decision, I guess, then. And do you see then that the percentage between people that understand Media Center, has that changed in the last, say, 12 months since Vista's come out? Have you found more people know what it can do and are coming to inquire about it, or is it not really made an impact?
No, definitely. It definitely has. Most of the customers who are already aware of Media Center find us through places like the Green Button or AVS forums or your podcasts. That's the main way customers would find out about S1 Digital. So most of our marketing is spent on educating customers that don't know about Media Center, and that's through advertisements in home theater magazines. We had an event last week with one of our partners in New York City, with Stereo Exchange, who are one of the biggest a custom installer and high-end home theater shops in New York City, and we held an event there in conjunction with Microsoft, where they invited down a whole lot of their customers. We invited down our mailing list. Microsoft invited some people as well. And the whole point of that event was to educate our customers who don't know about Media Center as to what it can do and the capabilities and the multi-room streaming and the HD DVD and Blu-ray playback and all that sort of stuff. And I have to say that, you know, events like that are hugely successful because customers don't realize that they may have a need or a want for this type of thing until they see it. So these people aren't technology savvy. They need this product brought to them to become aware about it. And that's where we spend most of our focus in terms of gaining new customers, as well as, you know, posting to forums like AVS Forum and the Green Button for customers that do know about Media Center. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think these events are a good idea. I certainly found that the people that want a high-end system and, you know that they want some kind of media system, they don't always know what components. If for them to actually see it in the flesh and to see what these capabilities are, that really is a good starting point for them to choose, you know, the best way of going around it. And I guess also you're all getting you know, the AV installers along as well to see what they can sell.
Right, so our AV installers are, you know, a great way to get in to penetrate this market for the customers that don't really know about what Media Center can do, because the custom installer and the dealer is generally pretty knowledgeable about the Media Center platform. Well, they are by the time we're finished with them anyway. And then they go off and sell to their customers the whole Media Center platform, you know, what it can do and why it's a benefit to them. And they typically do it when a customer is doing a custom installation. It could be from $50,000 to $1 million, and they're getting projectors, and they're getting media rooms, and they're getting whole house audio and video. And typically, our custom installers will put our media centers into that mix as well, as one of the main sources of video and audio. So there's lots of different channels and lots of different ways that we try and reach our customers.
And in terms of the product lines, and I notice you kind of got two product lines. Do you kind of split those into products that you sell direct to customers, and then you've got the products for the sort of the AV installers, that sort of the higher end stuff that they would install?
Exactly. And we introduced the two product lines last year. Was it this year? No, at the beginning of this year. Sorry, this year's almost over. And we divided into the Pro Line series and the Home series. And the reason we did that was because last year, we just had one main line of media centers, and we had a whole lot of custom installers and dealers coming to us and wanting high-end solutions for their high-end customers, and we couldn't give them the margins and the products that they wanted, and that would also work for us, you know, in terms of how much money they made and how much money we made and so forth. So we created a new line of media centers, the Pro Line series, which are a much higher end. So let me take that back. Both lines of media centers are both very high end. But we created the Pro Line series to target and to cater directly to our custom installer market, to give them a product line that would better meet the needs of their higher end customers. Whether that's someone who's doing a whole AV rack, for example, and wanted, you know, hot swap drives and streaming to five zones to the extenders and HD DVD playback and all that sort of stuff. So that was a product that we created for specific, you know, specifically for that market. Our home series are, you know, very, very powerful as well, but there's slight differences between, for example, the Platinum Edition, the FX Edition, that the custom installer would want to pay extra for.
So talk about the dealer range of products, then the pro line. What kind of components and what kind of configurations are you offering those in?
So, you know, at top of the line media center is the Server Quad Edition, which has a standard quad core processor. It has 6 hot swap drives. It has a dedicated RAID controller. So a lot of other media center companies, for example, are just using onboard Intel RAID for their RAID controller, whereas we put on a dedicated Arika RAID 5 controller. And the benefits to that are, you got to compare a server addition to a standard media center or somebody else's rack mount media centers. This thing just flies. It'll boot Vista in something like 10 seconds. It's ultra stable, so if a hard drive, the odd chance a hard drive fails, it'll beep at you, but it'll continue working like there was nothing wrong. You pop out the hard drive without bringing the system down. You replace the hard drive, put it back in, automatically rebuilds, and the customer doesn't even know there was any real performance degradation during that time. It's really, really fast. It has an HD DVD drive as standard. The server edition, we will be introducing a quad cable card tuners, so you'll be able to watch and record 4 cable shows at the same time. And that's something we'll be bringing out early next year. Our problem in that respect is that because we're a business, Time Warner charge us a ridiculous amount of money for each cable card. Like they charge us close to $100 per month per cable card. So we've been holding off doing any testing there because of the expense that we incurred.
Oh, so I see. So for you just to develop one of these machines and have it on the workbench testing it out, you've got to pay for these cable cards at $100 per card per month.
Correct. So I think that I'm going to take it upon myself to be testing, in quotes, testing a quad-core cable card at home, where Time Warner will charge us $5 per cable card per month.
That's crazy, that, isn't it? That you're effectively promoting cable card by offering these facilities, and yet you're penalized for doing it during the development phase, certainly.
Well, that's the joys of a monopoly for you when there's no alternative to your cable provider.
Yeah. I would let's talk about the cable card now, because as I mentioned in the intro, one of the reasons why I got in touch with you to come back on the show is because you're offering cable card, and one of the sort of very few companies that are doing that. So, to anybody that's not kind of sure exactly what that means, what is cable card and why can you offer that?
So, cable card has been one of the holy grails of Media Center since it was first introduced. So, traditionally, there was no way to record high-definition cable from your cable provider. And in addition, you also needed a cable box. And what you would do would be take the S-video output from your cable box and connect it to the Media Center, and you would watch and record all your cable channels in standard definition and use an infrared blaster to change the channels on the cable box. So with the advent of cable card is like for people who use a GSM phone, like your SIM chip in your mobile phone. It's basically a little card that you'd put into a tuner that identifies you as the customer and what channels you can get and what you're allowed to watch. So a cable card tuner in the media center is what you use to decode all your cable channels, and the cable card is what you put into the tuner that says these are the channels that you're allowed to watch. I guess is the simplest way to describe it. Mm-hmm. So with a media center with cable card, you would connect your coax cable, your cable company's cable directly to the media, to the tuner on the media center. You don't need a set-top box anymore, and you can watch and record all your channels, including high-definition channels and the premium channels such as HBO and ESPN and Showtime and all that sort of stuff, directly within the media center.
And so, I guess then if you're decoding in the cable card, and specifically if you're looking at 4 cable cards, you've got to have a fairly decent box to run this on.
Right. So if you want to run 4 cable card tuners plus 5 extenders, as well as the ability to watch HD DVD, then the server. One of the reasons they were limiting it to the server edition is because of the processing power that you would need to be able to do all of that. and the Quad Edition, the Server Quad Edition handles that without any problems at all. For our other media centers, you can the limit is 2 cable card tuners, and our dual core processors on them again handle watching and recording and streaming without any problems at all either.
And looking at that kind of server range, do you see then that a lot of the sort of the high end installs are going with the media center as a server and perhaps putting it out of the sort of the living room or the home theater and having extended devices consuming the content and the servers tucked away?
Some people do. It's not what we would recommend. Or you could put it on the rack. The reason that we would suggest that the media center actually be the device that's connected to the main TV or projector is because of the HD DVD and Blu-ray playback. So yeah, you could get a media center extender or like an Xbox 360 and add on the HD DVD drive, but then you would need a separate Blu-ray player if you wanted to watch Blu-ray.
Yeah.
The picture quality from all our media centers is exceptional. We used NVIDIA 800 series video cards. And next year there'll be some pretty cool stuff coming out in that department, so the picture quality will be even better. So where possible, we suggest to our customers that they do connect their media center, whether it be the rack mount or not, directly to their main TV watching television.
Right, and then use the extenders for sort of additional like kitchens and bedrooms and whatever.
Right, and then use the extenders for other rooms that they want to extend that to. But we would always say, yeah, use the media center on the main TV where you do most of your TV watching.
And you mentioned about the having the two cable card options. So we're talking about the ProLine range there, which is the sort of the dealer range, but the consumer range, the home series, they've got cable card options as well, have they?
Right, so the Platinum Edition does, the Mini doesn't. The Platinum Edition can be outfitted with 2 cable card tuners as well, also with the optional HD DVD and Blu-ray combo drive. The FX Edition, it comes with standard. The Mini Edition doesn't because it can't handle HDCP on the DVI output. We will probably be coming out with another media center early next year that will have it'll be a lower cost media center, and it'll have a single cable card tuner. But that's something that'll be coming out early next year.
So looking at those two now, they've got the media center Platinum Edition. So that's kind of your AV component media center, and then the media center Mini is from the picture looks a pretty small little box.
Right, so the Mini Edition is the same size as like a Mac Mini, for people that know the size of the Mac Mini. It's really tiny, it's the size of a book, but it still has a DVI output. It uses Intel 965 graphics, so it's pretty capable in that department. It has a 100 gigabyte drive, Core 2 Duo processors, a DVD reader and burner. And for it to be in such a tiny package is really amazing. So what a lot of customers will do, for example, especially our custom installers, is they'll buy one main media center as their main data store, and they'll rip all their DVDs to that, and then they'll use the Mini Edition in different rooms, sort of like extenders, but without the TV functionality, so that it can watch back all their DVDs across the network, sort of like a Kaleidoscape-type functionality, but of course at a fraction of the price.
I guess you can record non-premium cable card and still share that out to the Mini ones as well.
Well, not with a cable card tuner, you can't. Not if it has a cable card in it. So currently, anything that you record with a cable card, any TV channel that's recorded using cable card can only be watched on that media center and on an extender. If you record a TV via an ATSC tuner, which is in the United States, over the air, high definition, then yeah, that content can be shared to other devices.
And it seems to be a copyright protection issue, I guess, on the cable card that stops that being shared.
Correct. That was just the deal that Cable Labs worked out with Microsoft, and they said that one of the conditions is that anything that's recorded by cable card can't be copied or shared. Now, that may change next year. There's no information on that, but that is open to change. The powers that be decide that they want to lift that restriction, then that restriction could be lifted.
Yeah, it's not a technical problem. It's a rights issue.
It's a policy issue,
yeah.
Right.
Which I guess Microsoft had to go through some hoops just to get the Cable Lab certification for Media Center and for Vista.
You would not believe what Microsoft had to go through to get Cable Lab certification or Cable Lab's approval for this.
And did you have to submit your individual models, or does it become under the sort of the blanket of being Vista certified?
No. So again, that seems to be a bit of a fallacy that you read about how you get your media centers certified. There is no Cable Lab certification process. The cable tuners that ATI make had to be Cable Lab certified. If you're a Microsoft Direct OEM, then you are allowed to ship cable card tuners or cable card enabled systems.
Hmm.
It does require some contracts and special agreements that you have to sign and send to Cable Labs that promise, you know, that you won't do this and you'll do this and all sorts of things. But otherwise, you have to meet certain requirements, but we don't ship our systems off to Cable Labs for certification.
Right. So it's just sort of meeting the sort of the minimum requirements, and then you're free to develop the systems however you want.
Well, I mean, there is more to it than that. There's like special BIOS that we need to use. There's special license keys that we need to use.
Hmm.
We have to send, you know, a contract to Cable Labs. We do have to meet some certain other requirements, but yeah, I mean, it is a process to go through to ship a system with a cable card, but you know, as we said, you don't have to actually ship it to Cable Labs.
And how are you finding the uptake of the cable boxes? Are people interested in those? Is that what they're going for, or is it still really just whatever you ship? You know, if you ship ATSC, they're happy with those.
So we started shipping cable cards, I think, in mid-August, and out of the hundreds of systems that we've shipped since we started shipping with cable cards, I think we've shipped 3 media centers that didn't have cable card.
All right, so the uptake's been pretty good then.
So yeah, it seems to be that cable card is the thing that everybody wanted. And it was definitely a lot of pent-up demand. It seems like a lot of people were waiting for cable card ever since it was announced at the beginning of the year, or last year, I should say. And people are now, you know, finally getting what they wanted.
And I know that, you know, obviously from talking to people on the show before, that there was a big demand for the cable card. It was interesting to see whether that demand has turned into sales and whether it's actually driving media center adoption.
Well, it is in this market now. I would say that somebody who goes to a Best Buy or a Circuit City and buys a, you know, a Dell from off the shelf from the floor wouldn't know about cable card or anything like that. And you know, I don't think you can buy them from retail. But anyone in this space, you know, anyone who buys from us or knows about media center and wants to use it as a media center, I think, and assuming that they're in a location that has cable, I think would be very interested in a cable card tuner in their media center. If you're using your media center for TV, why wouldn't you want to get the most out of it by using cable card tuners?
Yeah, absolutely.
The only reason that you wouldn't would be if you wanted to use DirecTV, which, of course, you can't record from right now in high definition.
Mm. And I'm hoping that you know, these are the systems get adopted into media center. I mean, I've talked many times on the show about Sky in the UK, and there is no, you know, Media Center integration, and I hope one day we'll get some kind of announcement that, that they're going to do that. Whether we'll get it, I really don't know because of the Sky with their own proprietary set-top boxes and DVR solutions. But it seems, you know, the only way that really Media Center will get mass adoption in the UK is with having that facility in, which I guess is a similar situation with cable card in the US.
So, right, I mean, I can't speak to non-US standards. I mean, even though I'm Australian, so I understand PAL talk. It's been a long time since I was there, so I have no idea what's going on in the Media Center space in that department. But I'm now very familiar and conversant with US standards. So, other than, I mean, in the US, basically, it's either cable or satellite. So, it's either DirecTV or EchoStar, I think, is the other one. So, Microsoft have said that they're working on it. Microsoft and Intel have said that they're working on it. So, stay tuned to see whether that's going to be announced anytime soon.
I guess they've been the satellite companies have probably been watching how the adoption of cable cards been going as well, to see, because I guess that if they see that the cable card and Media Center adoption is going well, then you know it's something they may look at.
Definitely. I mean, I'm not privy to any of those discussions or, you know, how the conversations went, but I'm sure, you know, it was sort of like, well, you know, we want to expand our market as well, and Microsoft's doing something with cable, so you know, we better start thinking about how we're going to do it as well.
I mean, and the other HD formats, Blu-ray and HDVD, how are you finding the adoption of those now? Because certainly... you know, there's a lot of talk about it, but again, the competing formats seem to be sort of perhaps holding people's committing to going one way or the other.
Sure. Well, we now offer a combo HD DVD and Blu-ray drive. We stopped offering standalone HD DVD and Blu-ray drives, I think, just last month, because the combo drive was the same price as the HD DVD drive and cheaper than the Blu-ray drive that we were selling. So... we now only offer either a standard DVD player or an HD DVD Blu-ray combo. So you don't have to decide. If you have an S1 Digital Media Center, you get all the DVD formats. So we take that guesswork out of the customer, out of, you know, any sort of decision making. So you can get whatever DVDs or HD DVDs or Blu-rays that you want and know that they'll work with the Media Center. The other thing that we offer that a lot of other companies don't offer is integrated HD DVD and Blu-ray playback within the Media Center interface. So traditionally, if you want to playback Blu-ray or HD DVD discs, you would have to close Media Center and open up Power DVD Ultra and use your keyboard and mouse and click away. We offer software that tightly integrates playback, so it all seems like it's within the Media Center interface. So you'd launch the disc from Media Center. It has a 10-foot interface. You use the remote control. It has pop-up menus and everything. And that's something a lot of other companies don't offer, but we do.
Yeah.
So you never have to leave the Media Center interface to do anything.
Well, that's good, because I found when I was testing a Blu-ray on a Sony unit that there was kind of a disconnectedness between Media Center and then, you know, putting for the actual movie to come on through the 10-foot interface, you could tell it was flicking between different modes.
Well, it would. I mean, it does actually call another application, but it's integrated in with the Media Center home screen, and that other application that's called does seem like a 10-foot interface. I mean, it is a 10-foot interface product, and it does work with the Media Center remote, and... so to the customer, it just seems like it's integrated. There's no needing to shut down Media Center. And while this other application is running, you know, Media Center's... it looks like it's running within Media Center.
I mean, my next question was going to be, which of the two formats is proving more popular? But I guess it doesn't matter if you've got a dual drive. You just get whatever the content... you know, you just get, if the movie's on Blu-ray, that's the one you want, you rent that one, or you buy that one, and if it's on HDVD, you get that one. It doesn't really matter with a combo drive.
Exactly. And it plays both formats equally well. It includes support for all the extra features, whether it's Java or IHD, so all the pop-up stuff works. you know, CyberLink update their software with new patches so that, you know, it just works with all the latest discs as well.
That's a good way to go. It's always interesting to see, but we don't seem overall a year since last CES between any closer to seeing, you know, which of the two formats is going to come out a winner. And I think maybe we'll just see these dual drive options become more popular.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me because now we have a solution that plays both formats, so we don't care about which format. Well, I personally care because I have a personal preference. But from an S1 Digital point of view, we don't have to take a side. We can just we can be neutral and say we'll play whatever formats people want. We'd never want to have to pick a side.
And I think I said to someone on a previous show, one of the benefits of having a PC-based media center product is that as new updates and firmware and drivers and different formats come out, the media center is a platform you can update and keep going. So you're not committed to what you get on the day of delivery as being what you want in 2-3 years' time.
Right, exactly. And as new, video driver, as new video cards come out that add new features, and new drives come out, then yeah, we can say all our media centers are upgradable. Mm.
And then, so we mentioned about the two different ways of getting the product. So if listeners are listening to the show and they're interested in your media centers, where would they go to find out more information on that?
Our website,
which is
S1Digital.com.
S1Digital.com.
Letter S, the number one, and the word digital.com. If they want one of our ProLine series, then they could email us from our contact form on our website, and we would put them in touch with their local or the closest dealer to them. And of course, if they just wanted any of the home series, then they could just purchase directly.
And do you operate just in the sort of New York area, or have you got dealers sort of around the country?
No, we sell across the whole United States. In fact, I'd say, off the top of my head, 60% of our sales come from the West Coast. We're on the East Coast. But 60% of our sales, for some reason, come from the West Coast, between Seattle and California. Between Washington, and California. That's where most of our sales come from.
Mm. Well, I think they're really nice products, and they are high-end products, but in your market, that's what you're aiming for, isn't it? That sort of quality components, and you're certainly not looking at sort of box shifting. They are very nice-looking sort of professional AV components.
Right. And let me just, while you bring that up, you see a lot of discussions on some of the forums about how, you could go off and buy a Dell system or an HP system, because everybody seems to be looking for the lowest priced components. So you see a lot of people saying, HP has this system and it's only $1,000, and then in the next breath they'll say, I've got an HP system and it's crap, and the support people don't know what they're doing, and it keeps breaking down, and those sort of comments. So I just want to say that it's not cheap to run a high-end, high-touch, high-service media center company. We provide exceptional support, and if you do a search on AVS forums or I think the green button, you'll find some comments from people who have used our systems, who praise our support, or you read our website. We have some people who have left comments there. So, we definitely provide a very high level of support, and most of our people who support the product, know about the AV space as well, about the TVs and how to connect stuff up. So providing that support and providing the high level of components and all that sort of stuff, it isn't cheap, and it's not something that we could do for free. The other thing that we see a lot of people saying is, hey, you can spec out the same media center for $500 less, you're buying your own components, or $1,000 less or whatever. But that's great, but there's no support with that, and there's no marketing, there's no overhead, and you don't have an office and a showroom and people to pay and all that sort of stuff as well. So I just want to say, you know, to anyone who's considering a media center, you get what you pay for. So you can go with an HP or an Dell, and, you know, I'm sure they're fine. But if something goes wrong or you have any questions or you need any support, you're pretty much on your own. If you want a media center that's very high quality, that has a great build, and the backup and the service to support it, then S1 Digital is the way to go. If anyone has any problems, you know, if they ship it back, if there's a hardware issue or a drive fails, we usually turn it around within a day. I don't know if you could say the same thing if you shipped it to one of the other big companies. So that's just something to keep in mind if anyone's considering a media center. You know, do you want the lowbrow, or do you want like the you know, run-of-the-mill, cheap quality, cheap components assembled offshore, or do you want, you know, high quality local support, and a good looking system too?
Yeah, it comes down to, you know, what you get, what you want to pay for, and, you know, enthusiasts who like to build their own and maybe can, like you said, can source them cheaper, but there's a whole support. And certainly if Media Center's going to go forward into the high-end installations, you need that backup and you know, the product support and development and everything else, or it just won't be an accepted component in those circles.
Right. You know, and the cable card has just really added another level of complexity to this whole thing. And while most cable card installers go fine, there is, you know, it's not like setting up an ATSC or an NTSC tuner. There really is a higher level of touch required to get it working properly, because you need your cable company to come out. The cable cards sometimes don't work, so you need to know how to read whether it's a bad cable card, whether the signal is good, whether all the channels are received, and if they're not, what the problem is. And that's the sort of stuff that we have the expertise in knowing. So, you know, if you get a cable installer who may not know what they're doing and they put it in and you're not getting channels, for example, you know, we can resolve those issues pretty quickly, which you may not be able to do when you purchase through, you know, lowest cost denominator.
Yeah, yeah, it comes with the sort of the marketing. If you want the high availability and reliability, it's the same with servers. You know, in a corporate place, you know, you get the cheapest ones and you get the grief with that as an IT manager. I know there's a line between cheap and getting good service, and at the end of the day, the service is probably what keeps you in a job, as opposed to, you know, maybe saving a few pounds or a few dollars on the server.
So let me also tell you about two other products we're coming out with.
Sure, yeah.
So one of them is our Media Center, tentatively called our Media Center TX, as in Tango X-Ray Edition. And what that is a 17-inch touchscreen media center that you can basically use your finger to control. So it's a full media center. It's self-contained, so it's no separate box. It's like a 17-inch screen with the media center built into it. It'll have a single cable card tuner, and it's a media center that you can put into the kitchen. You can mount on the wall. You can put it in the bedroom. You can put it on a on an entranceway. You can add home automation functionality to it, so you've got touch control of your lights and shades and HVAC and all that sort of stuff. So that's something we'll be coming out with early next year as well. And that'll be pretty sexy, I have to say.
Yeah, that sounds good.
The other thing we're going to be coming out with very soon is a Windows Home Server, a high-end Windows Home Server aimed initially at the custom installer market. It'll be a 1U rack, which is very, very slim, with a 4 terabyte capacity. And then we're working on it and may or may not release an add-on that will provide another 4 terabytes in another 1U rack that will connect to the main media center. So you can have to the main Windows Home Server. So you can have 8 terabytes in 2U, a Windows Home Server set up that you could put in your closet or your rack or wherever for storing all your content and media and all the sort of stuff that Windows Home Server does.
Well, that sounds pretty interesting, because I think the Windows Home Server is an area that the AV installers could definitely go with, because the backup and everything else and the remote even the, just through the remote administration, make it an ideal component in that sort of infrastructure.
Definitely. And, you know, we have a lot of installers who use their media centers for movie storage. And they always seem to have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of DVDs that they want to store. So there's never enough room internally, no matter how much space we include. So this is a fantastic solution for them. You know, it's slim, it's out of the way, it's fast, and like you said, it provides all those extra functions that Windows Home Server provide over a network storage device.
Yeah, it's just it integrates much better than sticking an NASBox on the network. And I'm guessing that that's the remote into controls is a useful mechanism for the installers to offer support on the products, you know, so they can remote into it from through the internet.
Right. Well, you know, in terms of support, we actually use another product or another tool that allows us to remote into the customer's machines and take control of it. So that functionality doesn't really affect us much, but to a customer, you know, it allows them to remote into their machines when they're out of home and access all their files and desktop and stuff. But that's just, you know, our remote access is something else that we provide to our customers. We can, you know, one of the things that we can do is remote in and easily fix any issues, you know, especially when they're going through cable card setup. We can see what the problem is.
Yeah, okay. That, I mean, that makes such a difference, being able to see what the problem is. And you know, I know from supporting networks at the office, you know, the difference between talking to somebody through something and actually going onto the machine and seeing the problem for yourself makes a huge difference, actually seeing it there in front of you.
Exactly. It's part of the high-touch service that we provide.
And the touchscreen device sounds really nice too. Vista running the touchscreen drivers is very nice. The Media Center works very nice with the touchscreen. I've got a UMPC and that works really well with the touchscreen. So that would be a nice unit to see. And I think a kitchen environment is a nice place for a media center.
Oh, definitely. You know, you can add your menus. You can watch. The great thing about it is you can be watching TV or listening to music in the kitchen, you know, while you're cooking or whatever.
Yeah, I put the kids in. The kids can sit in there and watch something as well. So it's just another place that they can go, especially when you've got twins fighting over who's using what.
Another place you can put them to keep them quiet.
Yes, that's it. The more locations, the better. And I guess for kids as well, aside from the fact that you probably have to keep cleaning the screen, a touchscreen would be a nice intuitive way for them to control a media center.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you can use the remote control as well if you want to control it from, you know, across the kitchen. So, you know, you could be sitting down at dinner controlling the media center with your remote control while you're watching TV. But, yeah, you can certainly use your touchscreen. You can use, you know, add the keyboard and mouse or use the remote control as well. So you're not limited to how you can control it.
Excellent. We'll have to keep an eye on the website for more info on that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, there'll be a big announcement when we release both the products.
Well, Paul, many thanks for your time today. It's been a great catching up, and I'll include a link to the sites in the show notes.
Okay, thanks, Ian. Appreciate it. Good talking to you too.
Thanks to Paul. It's always fun talking with Paul. So don't forget to check out the videos. There's the links to this unboxing video. There is the Nivius video talking about the free Nivius Companion Basic, and also the walking around the show floor at CES. I should have another video out soon with more on the links to this, maybe the 2200, depending on timing. Media Center Awards show should be out possibly next week or the week after, depending on schedules. So I'll see you around on the forums, Facebook. Add me as a friend if you're on Facebook. Look for the Media Center Show or look for Ian Dixon. I'll see you around on the forums. The email address is ian@thisislifestyle.com. Okay, I think that's everything. I'll see you next week. Bye.